Hopefully some people from those other constituencies will make it. In terms of an agenda, I wanted to talk a little bit about... I want to start off and talk a little bit about process, and this may actually tie into the agenda a little bit. But then I wanted to review the sort of purely factual basis, just if there are questions about the various proposals. I think Steve had proposed some questions for Ross, and I just saw Tim, I guess, had sent an email with some questions for Kathy, who is not all, unfortunately. But similarly, I think, you know, if we have other sort of factual questions, I think we should spend some of the call answering those questions as the second half. And then that's what I propose for an agenda. Is there anything else people would like to cover on the rest of the call? Okay. Well, I want to talk about just the process for dealing with these proposals. I'm glad to see we got some. Simon, I'm not sure, you had sent out just a description of what GNR is doing now that you guys are have moved a little bit along into an implementation phase, I guess. Is that...
Sorry,
am I breaking up? I hate doing these things on a cell phone. My question is, Simon, you had sent along a description of what GNR is doing from a more... now that you guys are moving on into, I guess, an implementation phase of your quiz. And I guess my question is, would it be fair for us to treat that as maybe not a proposal, but at least sort of a, you know, another thing we could compare our various definitions of the purpose of quiz to, just to see how it sort of fits in?
Yeah, sure. I mean, excuse me. I doubt I could stop you comparing it even if I wanted to. But yes, I mean, it's sort of coincidence that that is sort of coming to the end of its process at the same time that, you know, we're discussing these particular issues. And although it was at the back of my mind, you know, I don't think we necessarily want to hold it up and say, you know, this is the way to go, folks. Because as I said in the email, you know, we're sort of not all registries are made equal by any means.
Sure.
As I said, you know, if it would help, then yes, certainly throw it in.
Yeah, well, the dot name whois, you know, experiment, I guess we'll call it, has been discussed by the task force a number of times in the past as sort of a possible interesting model to look at. So it may make sense to continue to do that in this process.
Sure.
Now that we've...
So you obviously, I mean, I guess that you guys are aware of the history that sort of we are trying to find a line that satisfies everyone with, you know, I guess our first priority is to ensure that we remain legal as far as UK and EU law is concerned.
Yeah, we've been briefed once or twice.
By Philip.
By Philip, absolutely.
Or maybe Hawkbond came onto a call, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it was Philip, as I reach back in the memory. So what I think, just in terms of process, what I'd like to propose is that we spend today's call, like I said, mostly just talking about the factual elements of each of these proposals, and we'll call, for the purpose of this discussion, we'll call the GNR plan a proposal, just for making it sort of fit into the same boxes that we're making everything else fit, although I'll note that it wasn't really tendered in that way. We sort of make sure everyone understands what each of these proposals is all about, then I'd like to spend then our time in subsequent weeks talking about how we think they fit into the various definitions of who is, and whether there are adjustments that would be that would have to be made or could be made in order to make them fit the various the two definitions of the purpose of who is that we've reached so far, or that might just be beneficial generally as a way to address some of our additional work items in areas 2, 3, and 4. So probably what I would propose is maybe, I don't know, let me ask first of all, is anyone, are there any plans for anyone to submit any additional proposals that just haven't made it to the list yet? Okay, so this is our universe of proposals, apparently. And if that's the case, then what I would propose is maybe we spend, for the next, say, 3 weeks, we could spend one week on each proposal, just talking about, like I said, how it fits within the various definitions of the purpose of who is, suggestions for improving them, or making them more harmonized, better with the individual proposed purposes of who is. Does that seem like a reasonable way to spend the next few weeks? Anyone have any other thoughts on that?
Jordan, this is Steve. The only reaction I have is I didn't view the .name put forward as, or GNR put forward as, a proposal. I mean, it's sort of a report. And I think, as you said, we've discussed this at some length, and I think we should keep an eye on how that develops and how it works and so forth.
So, Steve, do you think it wouldn't be useful to see whether or not, I mean, maybe we don't need to...
It's kind of a different creature than, for example, Ross's proposal. And I'm not sure I understand exactly Kathy's proposal, but...
This is David Mock.
Those are both kind of broader proposals.
David?
Yeah, pardon me for interrupting. I'm not speaking for Kathy, but... speaking on behalf of PIR, I would like to see the .name be treated as a proposal. I think it's an appropriate structure for the who is for all registries.
So Steve, David now has made the .name structure a proposal.
That's correct.
Is that a registry constituent? I didn't hear what you said.
Yes, that's speaking for the registry constituency.
Okay. So in any case, I mean, I think Steve, fundamentally, you're right. It wasn't. I think it's written up in such a way that it is more of a report. But I think it may be useful for us to just consider it in some of the same ways. You know, just looking at how it. Comports to the definitions of the purpose of who is that we've laid out, and to see, you know, if people have ideas that maybe say, well, you know, it may not be consistent with purpose number one. If we did this particular, made this tweak to it, would be, and that seems like it might generally improve it anyways, and so, you know, great. Similarly, it may be, if we find the elusive... if it turns out to be the elusive solution that conforms to both purpose one and purpose two, then that would be great. We could all maybe say, wow, we've, you know, achieved this nirvana that Milton thought there was no chance that we would ever achieve, and would, I think, get us much closer to being able to press on with the work for our subsequent terms of reference items without... wait for the council to come to a decision about the purpose of quiz, which is what I'm really hoping we'll be able to do. I think you know, just from that perspective, will be useful to look at in any case. Any other thoughts about that process from moving forward? OK, Okay, so I would then like to just move on to a to this factual discussion of these various ideas, and just to first of all, I'd like maybe just a brief introduction of the concepts, and then we could have any questions related to them. So I'll try this in the order that they were sent to the list. So I think the first of those, well, I know the first one was Ross's OPOC proposal. So Ross, could you spend maybe just a couple minutes walking the task force through the high level in case anyone hasn't had a chance to look at it yet? And then if people do have questions, we can factual questions, we can try to address them now.
Okay, great. I'm not calling from my from a wired line right now, so if my quality is bad, just let me know. So the operational point of contact proposal is was put together with the intent of creating some balance between what's collected, what's published, as it relates to the specific contact points within the WHOIS database. Specifically, right now we've got contact information for registrant, administrative contact, technical contact. Some registrars are publishing billing information. And so on. So what we did, this proposal actually got a start back in, when was that? The Argentina meeting. A bunch of us got together and started discussing what a new WHOIS output might look like if we were starting from scratch. So the intention here was to put an emphasis on ensuring contactability. We didn't talk about purpose at all. This document isn't intended to be a policy statement on purpose of WHOIS or the purpose of why you would want to contact someone. So in that respect, it's fairly open or receptive to the other policy that we're discussing. The example that I gave on the mailing list is probably the best illustration of what this proposal was intended to address, which was ensuring that in the event that there's something that there's questions or issues related. A water main break in a parking garage, you're not necessarily interested in contacting the owner of the building or the owner of the property that you're on, but just the person, perhaps the superintendent, who can actually shut off that water and solve that problem. So that was really the analog that we built around. So in this case, the superintendent would be that operational point of contact. And it's intended that that be a person or an entity, i.e. a proxy provider or an ISP or a DNS administrator or a corporate network supervisor, some person or entity like that, that could actually deal with inbound inquiries related to the domain name. So once we had an archetype in mind, we then looked at all of the data that was in WHOIS and started pulling out the data that had nothing to do with that point of contact, that had nothing to do with the ongoing operation of the domain name. So then what we ended up with was the OPOC proposal. So I think that's sort of generally where we're coming out. I don't go into or haven't gone into kind of what is coming in, what is going out. Happy to elaborate on that if there's anybody that has further questions about that.
So does anyone have questions for Ross about the proposal?
This is Steve. I had submitted some questions to the list, which Ross has very promptly answered. You know, as I said, I think this is a useful contribution because, I mean, to some extent, I think this begs the question of the purpose. And, you know, when you talk about an operational point of contact, it's operational to do what? That's kind of the next question. But I suppose one advantage of this is that this type of approach might work, you know, with either definition of the purpose. So at least with general it might. So I think that's that's useful. I think, I did have a few questions, and some of them, have been answered, and some I think we need to explore a little further. But as I said, I think it's a useful starting point.
Great, Steve. So the ones that you, the remaining questions you have or not, you'll either work those on the list, or you think they're not maybe just questions of fact to clarify on the call. Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, I mean, for example, there was a question about where this leaves bulk access, and a statement in here that this proposal presupposes that domain name contact data not be available for any sources other than those discussed by this proposal, unless by registrars, and in that case at the registrar's option. That, I think, is not the status quo, because I think in general registrars have to make bulk access available under certain terms and conditions. So I didn't know how that fit in. And in fact, the other thing I thought was interesting here, and I would be interested to hear more about, is the concern that registries and registrars, I think this is a concern only in the registries, but a concern that registries and registrars both have obligations to make WHOIS data available, and that creates problems. I mean, at one level, that creates redundancy. If the registrar's WHOIS isn't accessible, you can go to the registry. But I think Ross's point is that these two don't always match up, and that this creates problems, which I hadn't heard before. I'd be interested to find out more about that, because I think this proposal would say that in the future, registries that are now required to make this type of contact data available would not any longer be required to do so. Or, in fact, they would be forbidden from doing so. So I think that's a kind of a feature that I wasn't, or an issue that I wasn't familiar with, so there's more detail on what kinds of problems that creates. It would be good to have that.
Yeah, Ross, could you speak to any of those types of issues off the top of your head?
Yeah, happy to speak to both, actually. So now I understand what presupposition one is, Steve. Thanks for that. That's a really unclear statement in this document that should probably be fleshed out. The intention there was to specify that there are two sources for the data currently, the registrar source and the registry source. The registrar source includes web access, port 43 access, and other means like bulk access. We're not proposing that any change to the method of access be made. So port 43 would still be required, web access would still be required, and bulk access would still be required. We're simply talking about changing the scope of the requirement as it relates to what data is displayed in those various points, not whether or not those various points are valid. Or those various sources are valid, I'm sorry. To the second issue, I guess because there's two sources for the data, it's important that we have a very clear statement on which one of those sources is the authoritative source for that data. In this case, it's clear that as registrars collect that data, they are the ones that are most in the position to make authoritative statements about the validity, accuracy, timeliness, et cetera, as it relates to that data. The registries simply are not. They're once removed in this equation. So we're making a very strong proposal here that the registrar data be viewed and accepted as the authoritative source for that data. And as such, any data or publication of data that would potentially be conflicting with what's in that registrar data set, it'd simply be moved from the registry who is to eliminate that confusion. And as far as types of confusion go, I think I gave you a couple examples on the mailing list there. I'm happy to discuss those further if those need more clarification.
So. The problem with the status quo on that second point is, ordinarily new information would come into the registrar. The registrar is supposed to transmit this to the registry. So maybe the registrars aren't transmitting it to the registry, or maybe the registry isn't updating its database when it receives new information from the registrar. One or the other thing is happening, and therefore the registry and registrar databases are getting out of sync.
No, actually, it's more a case of a third option, which is that the registries and registrars are subject to different policies as it relates to this data. So, for instance, the expiry, the question of when a domain name expires, and I'm going to get this wrong. This is one of the, I don't pay a lot of attention to policy in this area, so Jordan or Tim, please jump in and help me explain this if you can, but when a domain name expires and it's in that that window after which the domain is still active, but the current term has expired, the registries will show that a different expiry status for that domain name than a registrar typically would. And that's simply because of the policies in effect at two different levels. And that's a terrible explanation. Maybe Jordan, Tim, can you jump in on that? Or Tom, and anybody that's got a clearer...
Yeah, I can help clarify that real briefly. The issue is just the way, so at a registry level, a domain name, once it reaches expiration date, automatically renews. Most registrar, but after it automatically renews, there's a 45-day grace period in which the registrar can delete the name and essentially get their money back for the name. And so most registrars use that as an opportunity for the registrant to come along and still bring their name without getting it deleted, so that they have the longest period of time possible in order to renew their name. But what happens is the actual event of collecting money from the registrant in this case, the registry doesn't really know anything about. So on the domain name's expiration date, the registry automatically renews the name and advances the expiration date by a year on that date. The registrar still hasn't collected any money for the renewal, so it doesn't think that the name is actually renewed. So during this 45-day period, or until either the name is deleted or the registrar collects money and advances their registration, their expiration date, the expiration date displayed in the registry has advanced by a year, but the expiration date displayed by the registrar still shows a date in the past. So that's one area that can be potentially confusing, I think.
Yeah, and there's another point that it's worth to be mentioned. It's legal problems that might arise if a registrar and a registry are not under the same legislation. So maybe the registry, for example, based in the States, has different rules as a registrar who is based in Europe. And through that, there might be certain differences at who can get access to what data. And if you just have one point of access to the data, it's very clear defined.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, any additional questions for Ross about this?
Well, just one question following on from that.
Sure, go ahead.
It's a factual question I don't know the answer to, which is when people are obtaining WHOIS data, I don't know how much of the time they're obtaining it from the registrar and how much of the time they're obtaining it from the registry. And, in fact, the requester often won't know that either because they're actually obtaining it from a third party. So where did that third party get it? Did it get it from the registrar or the registry? Not always clear. So I suppose that supports the argument here, but it also means that it's hard to gauge what the impact of this change might be.
Yeah, actually, there's a pretty quick statistical way of measuring that, Steve. So the vast majority of cases throughout the namespace are related to COM, or the vast number of inquiries are related to COM, they're related to NET.
In that situation, this doesn't really apply, does it?
Well, it certainly does. It would apply across all registries. So let's call that 75% of the cases for the sake of argument. It may be higher, it may be lower. I suspect it's probably higher, but it doesn't. The number is largely unimportant. So that means, though, that in 75% of the inquiries, those inquiries are actually ending up with the registrar. They're not coming from third party. They're not coming from a registry. They're actually sourced through the registrar. My suspicion is that as it relates to those external queries, the impact is going to be almost insignificant.
Yes, Steve, I think the problem does, just to clarify, the problem probably does still apply to CommonNet. It's just there's a more limited set of data that is displayed at both levels. But they can still be out of sync.
Okay.
Another example that is just the VeriSign, who is, updates like very infrequently, once every 24 hours or something like that, whereas a lot of registrars have much faster update cycles. So if you update your information, it will be updated relatively quickly in the registrar, as it is, but it will take a long time to show up at the registries, which can be a little confusing as well.
Yeah, and besides that, one more argument might be that the COM registry doesn't even have the data to provide.
Yeah, and I'm just talking, if you like
invent
a name server change, for example, you wouldn't see that show up in the whois at the registry level for quite a while, potentially,
yeah.
Even though it would be changed in the DNS and it would show up on your registrar's whois. But yeah, there's a lot of information that just doesn't show up at all in the ComNet registry, obviously.
Okay, but to the extent then that most people end up at the registrant, or excuse me, at the registrar who is anyway, at least in the COM world, then I guess that means that this confusion occurs only in a small group of cases where people for some reason consult the registry who is and get the raw or get different information about the expiry date.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment, Steve, based on this conversation so far. I mean, it may be that there's data out there that we could try to look for as well.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that the majority or even a large minority of registrants get confused by that data sync issue, Steve. But you know, even at levels of, let's say, 1% or 0.5% of registrants, that's a huge number of phone calls or emails that need to be dealt with. You know, so making that go away is really important to the members of my constituency. Making that issue go away.
Yeah.
This is Kathy Kleiman, just announcing that I'm finally here.
Kathy.
Washington traffic. Sorry about that.
Okay, any other questions for us about the OPOC proposal? Okay. I think then we will move on to a quick discussion about the second proposal that we've received. And I think that actually is Kathy's proposal. So, Kathy, you weren't here when we talked about what we were doing, but what we're trying to do on today's call is just have a sort of brief factual review of each of these issues. So I'm hoping maybe you can spend a couple minutes just talking about your proposal, and then if people have questions about the sort of facts around it, then you might like sort of substantive questions about the proposal itself as opposed to whether or not it's a good idea, then hopefully you could field those as well.
Okay. And I noticed that Tim sent a question that I haven't had a chance to respond to, so hopefully we can do that. Our proposal is much more a process proposal. It is as much a process proposal as a substantive proposal. And what it says is that once you pick a purpose of your database, formulation one, formulation two, something in between, something that's completely different, once you pick that, then what we're saying is you have to look at the data and say, is it relevant, not excessive to the purpose, the data that we're collecting? And the whois, is it relevant, not excessive to the purpose that we've chosen? And so what I did was kind of resubmit the highlights of the NCUC contact statement that just said that we ran this down. If you said that the purpose of the whois database was a technical purpose, then do you need contacts that are primarily for non-technical purposes, or do those belong somewhere else in the registry data? Do those belong under other categories of business and proprietary data that are not part of the whois, such as credit card data? But given, you know, given how long ago the fields of the whois were established, it's whatever purpose we choose, it's time to go through and say, you know, is this contact relevant? Is all the data we're collecting for this contact relevant? And if not, what do we do? Is that fair?
Yeah, great. And so Kathy, so you've done some analysis, I guess. So under, if we chose formulation number one, you'd say, here's what you think the result of that would be in terms of what data would be collected and displayed. Do you have any thoughts on how your proposal, if we chose formulation two, how it would play out in that case?
Actually, my proposal hasn't even been revised since formulation one, since we came up with the formulations.
Okay.
Again, it's much more of a process that this is something we have to engage in as we go forward.
Okay, so the view basically that only the technical contact would be displayed is still just reflects the NCUC's original sort of view of what the NCUC thought the purpose of WHOIS was on the first pass. Is that right?
That's currently right. It probably applies to formulation one, but I just
right.
As I said, I thought we should wait until we find out what the purpose is and then go through the whole analysis. But there's no question that under EU law, it's an analysis that we're required to do. But you're right, I haven't done it yet.
Okay. Okay, great. Any questions for Kathy about her proposal? And maybe we should just start with Tim's.
This is Tim. My question was not viewed as a process. Doing it that way, I guess, it's a little bit different picture. My concern was just, you know, since it was centering on collection, that registrars will still need to be able to collect enough information to be able to determine who the registered name holder or the owner, if you will, of the domain name is for other processes, necessarily technical or information that needs to be public but still needs to be in their records in order to facilitate things like transfers or transfers of registered name holders, that type of thing. But as a process, it certainly sounds reasonable.
Any other questions for Kathy? So Kathy, just thinking about, I have one other question. Would you imagine we might overlay this process on top of one of our, so if, say, we came up, we tweaked either Simon's or Ross's proposal some, and everyone in the task force, you know, thought it was an interesting idea and might be worthy of some future discussion. Would you imagine we might just overlay the process you've proposed on some more concrete proposal in order to evaluate whether or not it was we were doing the right thing in terms of comporting it to the purpose of WHOIS and making sure we were collecting the right data?
Talking about overlaying it on top of a proposal before we have the purpose of WHOIS.
No, I'm saying once we have a purpose of WHOIS, or maybe even in the process. Right now, you know, one of the objectives that we have is to, in viewing these various proposals, is to look at how they comport with each of the two definitions of purpose. So would you say maybe we could just look at your process and say, if formulation number two, say, were adopted, let's apply this process and see how it applies to, say, Simon's proposal, and is it consistent, and are we collecting the right data if that were the case?
You know, I have to tell you, I haven't even received Simon's proposal. Can you tell me when that was distributed?
It was sent out yesterday. And it was called.
Well, there's some dispute as to whether it's actually a proposal.
Yeah, so it was not called a proposal. It's certainly not submitted as a proposal.
Where are we going there? Who is?
Did it go out to the whole list?
Mm-hmm. It did, yeah.
Okay. Could somebody resend that to me?
I will do that right now.
Yes. If we want to go into an analysis, say, with the OPAC proposal under Formulation 1, we could certainly do that if you wanted to, because I believe one of the premises of the OPAC proposal is that we continue to collect all of the current data in the WHOIS.
Correct. I think
that's correct. Right?
Ross has said it doesn't affect collection of data.
Right. So, you know, we can throw out using Steve's famous hypotheticals, we can run down some hypotheticals. Is it necessary under Formulation 1 to, let's say Stephen King wants to have a website, you know, the famous author wants to have a website, and he wants it to be clear that he endorses it, that it's his website, but he doesn't want to list his home address and the who is, but his agent will act as his administrative contact. I mean, is this what you want to do, Jordan? We can do this and run down. Is it necessary under Formulation 1 to have, you know, all of the data that we currently collect in the who is?
Yeah, I'm not necessarily proposing right now that we actually do that, but I'm just wondering if you think it's just a process, if it's something that we could just overlay on some of the other proposals as opposed to
absolutely
considering it
absolutely
independently as its own thing.
Oh, good point. Yes, it has to be considered in conjunction with other proposals. I see what you mean.
Okay. Any other questions for Kathy? Okay. So moving on then, Simon, we'll have you maybe just give us a brief update on what GNR is doing and the current sort of state of, as opposed to getting too deep into the state of the implementation, just talking, maybe reminding the task force about what you're planning on doing and...
excuse me.
Yeah.
Certainly. Now, I will start off with the chat in so far as this is not a process that I have been closely involved with at all. And when Philip left, I sort of rather rashly put my hand up and joined this task force. So if what I'm about to say does not fill in sufficient detail, Hawkon, who's the guy in, you know, at GNR who actually sat down with the representative of the Data Commissioner in London, he's happy to join a future call and colour in detail if that is required. Having said that, when GNR started back in 2002, the UK Data Commissioner was interested in us, in so much as there were a series of meetings between ourselves and himself, and he started from a position that he didn't at all like who is full stop. And I guess where we have finally got to today is an implementation of a sort of halfway house that was agreed with the representative of the Data Commissioner probably sort of 2-3 years ago now. Now, when I say agreed, of course, you don't get certificates saying, you know, you are fully compliant, love and kisses, Commissioner. We got an opinion that, you know, we had gone some way from where we were, and you know, potentially would satisfy, you know, their particular requirements. So what we are now road testing, and what, if there are no significant hiccups, will most likely go fully live and be our only who is from, I think April is what we currently think, is standard details, basic details will be always available for no charge, and it is pretty basic, registrar and sort of name servers and that kind of stuff. Legitimate inquiries, I think there was a lot of discussion, and I'm not sure we've specifically defined what legitimate inquiries are, but they cover people like your sort of your security agencies, you know, from wherever they happen to be, legal inquiries, etc. There is a separate agreement which, if signed and submitted to us, you know, we will then provide a password which will allow access to extensive Whois lookups for no charge. But there's no, I believe, and I will get back to you if I'm wrong on this, to the you know, by email, but there's no way that these can be automated. I think one of the commissioner's biggest problems was the fact that you get some sort of whiz kid, and he can sort of, I don't know, I'm not really a techie, I'm a basic bookkeeper, so forgive me if I'm getting my terms wrong, but clever people can do things and extract masses of information automatically, and the UK commissioner didn't like that. So we sort of, I think it actually says prove you're human at some point during this process, and you know, there's some letters you have to rekey in or something, and the password is intended to prevent automated extraction of whoIS data. So legitimate inquirers of extensive whoIS can look up information as needed, as I say, on signing of a particular agreement. And for anybody else, they now have to pay for extensive whoIS lookups, or they will have to pay. €2 for 5 lookups, and the lookups expire, the passwords, which one password per lookup, expire 24 hours after the issue, is effectively as far as discussions went 2 years ago. We believe now we are complying with what the commissioner said would be useful if we could do. And I understand that in the time there was information with other, you know, sailors, you know, being to end amongst the, you know, various discussions that went around. So we've effectively finally implemented, you know, what we said we would. Now, looking at the three issues that, you know, we're talking going forward, I guess this really only addresses the access issue, not the other two. You know, it's I can, if I don't think I include the URL in the email I sent yesterday. I'll send everyone the URL, and you know, you can see how this sort of restricted or tiered access works in practice. And sort of, you know, all comments are welcome from anybody in this you know, public beta period. So I think that's about all. If anyone has any questions.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Are there questions for Simon about what .name's planning on doing?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
Simon, the paying part, the paying, do you collect reasons for that? Can anyone access the database for any purpose, including nefarious purposes, provided that they pay their €2?
There is some terms and conditions, which I'm saying that I believe there are terms and conditions. You have to say click. I was on there 2 seconds ago, but I don't believe we don't require people to sort of key in a reason for them collecting the data.
And will the website, or how you access the paid access, will that be kind of easily visible? For example, you go to the .name whois and, you know, maybe see the basic information, and will there be kind of a click here if you want to pay for more data?
There are. Maybe I'll send out the. There are sort of terms and conditions, but you don't actually have to tick it to say you've read it. You just submit the query. If you go to the basic whois. The whois page, you get the option of doing a summary or a standard search, and then for detailed whois queries, you just put it in and you submit the query, and it'll effectively come back and say you need passwords and you'll need to pay for this. So it doesn't say on the initial page, it doesn't actually explain that there will be a charge for detailed whois searches, but that becomes fairly obvious once you click further in pursuit of such detailed information.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Simon? Okay. I think that's that covers all of the proposals that we've seen so far. What I'll propose is that we, in the coming weeks, one per week, we will take these proposals and take a stronger look at them in terms of now how they fit into the various proposals, proposed definitions of who is. It's going to get very confusing. The proposed formulations, we'll call them, and whether adjustments need to be made in order to make them that would make them somehow fit into the formulations, and whether or not just generally we think that there are ways that they can they might be improved to be more useful or more acceptable to the task force. And I'll propose we stick in the same order. I think actually it may not make sense to, since Kathy's proposal is more of a process, it may not make sense to handle it in quite the same way. So I propose actually we just schedule for now next week that we take a look at the OPOC proposal, and the following week we take a look at the .name .name idea / registry proposal, and we can, and then I'll think in the meantime maybe about whether there's a way to drill down into Kathy's idea or, at this time, or whether it just makes sense as we're looking at these various concepts to keep it in mind.
Jordan, can I raise something?
Yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
Somebody, it may have been Simon, somebody else mentioned three criteria that we were looking at proposals, that we were evaluating proposals against. I could have kind of misheard this in passing. One was access, one was collection, and I wasn't sure what the other.
Oh, sure. The idea here is to look at, to see how these proposals also, I guess the other thing we'll look at is how these proposals address the remaining items of our terms of reference. And to a certain extent, if they, if they're silent on for example, so the three areas are the definition of the contacts, access, and accuracy. Those are the three areas that remain in our terms of reference. So those are the areas that we ought to be looking to see whether or not the proposals address those issues. If they're silent, I think we would have to decide whether or not we think it makes sense within the regime of that proposal to stick with the status quo, or whether some additional enhancement might be required. So, for example, I think in the case of the .name proposal, there's really nothing that's changed with regards to accuracy, so it might be possible to overlay some sort of accuracy-related changes on top of that proposal. Or similarly, if people thought that it keeps the contact regime the same, and so some, we might still have to tackle the issue of the definition. We thought that was an appropriate way to deal with the access issue.
Okay. Then I'd like to request that we specifically look at collection whenever we look at access, that this be a criteria of evaluation, because I guess you can interpret the NCUC proposal as raising a counter-proposal that we do not need to collect all the data currently within the WHOIS. To that extent, it's not merely a process proposal. It is a flat proposal that says that some of this data is excessive.
Okay, so you would view the NCUC proposal maybe as just, if we look at originally at the technical, at the original proposal by the NCUC, it said basically you should only collect the technical information. So would you say that you might also include that as a specific proposal as to what should be done with regards to the collection?
Tim raised some very good issues. Let me get back to the task force with a more targeted proposal in light of the discussion, in light of what I'm seeing, so that I think we do in some ways have a third proposal.
Okay, great. Well, why don't we'll, as soon as we know what that is, we'll put that on the calendar probably the week after the .name proposal.
Thanks.
Any other questions or comments?
Jordan, it's just a scheduling question. Usually when we're meeting every week, it's because we have an imminent deadline or something that we need to meet, and I'm just wondering what you see as the deadline here.
Sure. I don't see an imminent deadline. I do think, though, it's just given, I think these are things that we can tackle in probably under an hour each, which is the other thing we try to do when we meet every week. Although there's not a deadline, I think, you know, we had talked about using the month of February to discuss these various proposals on our last call, and if we have three and if perhaps any more somehow make it to us, we, you know, take 2 months instead of 1 month in order to deal with them. So just in terms of keeping sort of on the schedule we had discussed on our previous call, I think that's the rationale. Any other questions? Okay, so next week we'll have a call at the same time. It will be limited to an hour, and I hope people between now and then can spend some time thinking about whether they believe that the OPOC proposal is consistent with the various formulations, and if people have suggestions as to how they think it might be improved, those would be welcome next week as well. So until then, we'll wrap this call up and hope everyone has a good week in the meantime.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.